Hey, good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. It is Friday. There's all kinds of hell a-popping. I was watching Michael Isikoff of Newsweek magazine on Rachel's program. On Monday, a report is going to be released that begins the process of further exposure of the Bush crime family's terror tactics that were used against people who were being detained by the CIA. And according to Isikoff, this is going to be a real serious series of charges as a result of this information. Also, over the past couple of days, ever since an excerpt from Tom Ridge's book was leaked, an excerpt in which he made it clear that the Bush crime family politicized terror alerts and to their own ends. It wasn't just the election of 2004. If you watched Oberman's program tonight, there were 13, 14, 15 different instances where the color-coded terror stuff was dragged out in order to divert attention and to make it appear that George W. Bush was this great hero who was protecting the American people. We're going to talk a little bit about this tonight as we get into the program. At the very beginning here, though, we're going to talk to Larissa Alexandrovna, who is the editor, one of the editors at rawstory.com. As a matter of fact, I think she's on the line now. Hi, Larissa.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing good. I said you're managing editor at Raw Story. Is that right?
Of Investigative News.
Of Investigative News. Okay.
Right.
All right. We I read your report that was posted yesterday, the same day that an op-ed written by Karl Rove was posted at the Wall Street Journal. And you begin the piece you wrote, and let me just say this for the public's benefit. You start by saying Karl Rove's latest attempt to proclaim his innocence and demand apologies from those who have accused him of being behind the prosecution of former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman may backfire if it turns out that Rove was improperly receiving inside information after leaving his position as Deputy White House Chief of Staff. And then you quote what he said, part of what he said in the Wall Street Journal op-ed piece. Pick it up from there. What is it that Rove said in the op-ed piece that may expose him to, if not criminal charges, certainly reveal him as a liar?
Well, I mean, the whole thing is a lie from top to bottom, but what really caught my attention is the part where he says, I also understand that Ms. Simpson, that being Dana Jill Simpson, the whistleblower in the Siegelman case,
right,
refused to cooperate with the Justice Department. And the Justice Department, more specifically the Office of Professional Responsibility, is tasked with investigating lawyers working for the Justice Department. So they're conducting an investigation, but Rove somehow knows that who they're talking to or not talking to, who's cooperating and who's not. And that's what I found really remarkable. How does he know this? It's mind-boggling, really. Obviously, it's an attempt to discredit Simpson, but he is right. She did not cooperate, although he's wrong about the reason.
All right. I think people who have studied or are aware of the case against Don Siegelman, and we've had his daughter on this program. We had Don on. Are aware that this was a Karl Rove operation. What is it about what he wrote in the Washington Post that either further clarifies his involvement or his directives to get this done? Why is what he said so important, since I think most people understand he was behind this?
Well, I mean, he really doesn't. He proclaims his innocence, which is hilarious. He points to his recent testimony and the documents released by the House Judiciary Committee, which in fact show him to be deeply involved in these various, not only Siegelman's prosecution, but the firing of U.S. attorneys. He claims that the documents and his testimony exonerate him, which in fact they do not. They actually, the whole thing is purely delusional. But what's new in this is that he appears to be getting direct information about an ongoing investigation inside the DOJ into the allegations of political prosecutions, of which he is one of the named targets or suspects.
Right. This would be like leaking grand jury information. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And
all this is happening, even though Rove is no longer associated with the government, which I think would clearly establish that one of the major operations before Bush left office, before Cheney left office, was to make sure there were plants in almost every branch of government that would continue to funnel information to these people so that they knew what was going on and could come up with a defense or an offense. Do you think that's probably the case here?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if that's the case, but I think it's important to point out that the Obama administration has yet to remove many of the controversial and the criminal or allegedly involved in criminal activity U.S. attorneys from their posts, mm-hmm. including Siegelman prosecutor Lyra Canary, who is Karl Rove's buddy's wife,
mm-hmm.
and. That, I think, speaks volumes. Why have these people not been removed?
Well, that was going to be my next question. This, you know, is another example, I think, of the Obama administration in general, but President Obama specifically, and even more specifically, his Attorney General, Eric Holder, not doing what I thought the assumption was made, and maybe it was only assumption during the campaign, that they would clean the garbage and the filth and the criminal activity out of the Justice Department, arguably a department that has been more criminalized by the Bush administration than any time in its history, even Nixon. So why are they doing nothing? Why is Don Siegelman still spinning and twisting in the wind here?
Well, and many others, I should add, including Paul Minor. Why, I don't know, but I think it's interesting that Ted Stevens got attention from Holder.
He did.
His case got attention.
I think Holder took an unprecedented step of ordering the court to dismiss everything.
That's right, and opened an investigation into those prosecutors. Yet, in a case that's probably 10 times worse in the Siegelman mm-hmm. case, and certainly on par in the Paul Minor case, in those two cases, nothing. Silence, crickets. But I just want to point one more thing
mm-hmm.
in the article that I published yesterday. Aside from Rove making that claim that he's getting, you know, insider information, which is alarming,
mm-hmm.
the other thing that we come to learn is that OPR, which again I stress, their entire objective.
Well, wait, for the listeners, Office of Professional Responsibility within the Justice Department.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right, I'm sorry. They are responsible for investigating attorneys working for the DOJ.
Right.
Okay? So, knowing that that's their job, what is it that they begin to do? They begin to investigate Dana Jill Simpson. They begin investigating her private life, including her sexual relations by contacting her ex-husband, whom she'd had not seen in 12 years.
Now, let me clarify, just in case, Larissa, Simpson worked for Siegelman's opponent, Bob Riley, and she worked as an oppo or an opposition researcher, and she was the whistleblower who said in an affidavit that the Bob Riley campaign had used all sorts of if not illegal, certainly close to it tactics against Siegelman, and the result of that was this forced investigation that resulted in Siegelman being convicted and sent to prison. So,
well, and more specifically, she overheard a conversation which ties Rove directly to the prosecution of Siegelman.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came forward with this, I want to remind people, her house was set on fire and she was forced off the road into a car accident by a cop.
Hold on, if you would, Larissa, let me put you on hold. We got a break here. We'll come back in just a moment, okay?
Okay.
We're talking with Alyssa Alexandrovna, who is the managing editor managing editor of Investigative News for RawStory.com. The article we're talking about is up at that website right now. Stay with us.
Try to divide the indivisible.
The
This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it's our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Past the hour. We're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna, who's the managing editor of Investigative News for RawStory.com. She has up at the website right now an article about Karl Rove's further, I'll call it criminal activity, although Larissa doesn't label it as such, where this time where it concerns the prosecution of former Alabama former Alabama governor Don Siegelman. Now, we were, where were we? We were talking about the involvement of Simpson.
Dana Jill Simpson, right.
She was a Republican lawyer who turned whistleblower.
That's right.
Okay.
And shortly thereafter.
No, I'm sorry, Larissa, go ahead.
Oh, okay. And shortly thereafter, her home was set on fire and she was run off the road by a cop. And now we find out, which is the second part of my article, is that the Office of Professional Responsibility at the Department of Justice, which is tasked with investigating wrongdoing or allegations of wrongdoing by attorneys working for the DOJ, was actually investigating or attempting to intimidate Simpson through the pretense of an investigation by trying to put pressure on various friends and family, and from the communications I've seen, they were trying to suggest that she had adopted a little girl, and they were trying to claim that she had done so illegally, which is not true.
Now, this was the Bush Justice Department, of course.
But these people are still there.
In fact, right.
When I called for comment, I called the offices of the very same prosecutors at OPR, the Office of Professional Responsibility, who, you know, surprise, surprise, did not call me back. So, again, the fact that somebody is feeding Rove information on in an ongoing investigation where he is actually one of the people involved in, you know, alleged wrongdoing.
It sounds like a felony.
Yeah, well, at least for the OPR people it would be.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Not for Rove. Rove, Rove is a beast and a snake. He'll take whatever's given him. But as you point out in the article, if this is coming from the current Justice Department, then all sorts of laws are being broken.
That's right. That's right. And it's astonishing because he writes this in an op-ed that's completely filled with lies. For example, he says that he testified under oath and that Dana Jill Simpson did not, when in fact he did not testify under oath, and she did. And not only did she testify under oath, she did so in public and also provided a sworn deposition. It's almost, you know, surreal that he's able to say these things, that the Wall Street Journal was willing to print such absolute dishonesty. But for me, the really, you know, alarming part was that he's still being fed information from a Department of Justice that the current administration should have cleaned out long ago, as is their prerogative when they come into office.
Right. Well, that's the question. And I know you have, for me, the question for me is why Eric Holder or Barack Obama have not begun the process that every single president goes through, and that is asking for and usually getting the resignation of all the U.S. attorneys, whether they actually leave the job or not. In some instances, it's just pro forma, but this is what you do. Now, it's my understanding that one of the tricks used by the Bush administration before they left was convert a lot of these politically appointed jobs into civil service jobs.
And right, but U.S. attorneys don't fall under that.
No, they don't. They, you're right. But that leaves in place this cadre of spies who are feeding Karl Rove information. What do you think it's going to take for Eric Holder to get hands on with the Siegelman case top to bottom and get rid of the people who are obviously breaking the law? What the hell is it going to take, Larissa? I mean, they've been in there
I couldn't even tell you. I've been investigating this for years now. I've provided the Department of Justice and the House Judiciary Committee with all of my articles mm-hmm. and interviews and such for their own investigation. I don't know what more can be done. You know, shame apparently is not working. Mm-hmm. But it's in it, again, I should stress, it's not just Siegelman. It's not
right.
just Paul Miner, Westfield, John Whitfield. There are close to 1,000 cases of political prosecution mm-hmm. that nobody is interested in because it didn't happen to them or someone they know. And it's alarming because it reminds me, I hate to say, a lot of the Soviet system.
Right, right.
You know, no man, no problem.
Right.
So.
Larissa, listen, thanks for joining us tonight. I strongly recommend that people go to your website and read this, rawstory.com. It's right there on the main page, the link, you'll find it. And please keep us abreast of what you're doing because, you know, the Siegelman story is one that we've been interested in too. And I know that you've been doing most of the work on trying to bring the truth to this. Thanks, Larissa.
Thank you.
Oh, one more thing before you go. You've completely lost your Russian accent.
Did I have one before?
You did. You did. At least to my ear. Thanks, Larissa. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Before the hour. Hey, want to play podcast trivia? All right, let's do it. We have Boku's. We have Boku gift subscriptions to give away at the Malloy podcast downloads. So, you know, the regular price is $59.40 a year or $7.95 a month. We are going to give away three tonight starting now. If you'd like to take a shot at the multiple choice question to win this, now is time to call in. The number is 877-996-2556. It's fairly simple. We will give you a question regarding a member of the Bush crime family. Who's in the barrel tonight? Oh, Bush. Okay. We'll give you the question and four possible answers. And if you get it right, bingo, you win a free one-year subscription to Malloy commercial-free podcast downloads, okay? All right, I see the lines just ringing their little butts off. Let's see if we can get somebody here. Little tiny article in the New York Times today that caught my eye. I'll just share it with you here real quick. It says when it's under the science and health little mini section of the paper. When government scientists went looking for mercury contamination in fish in 291 streams around the nation, they found mercury contamination in every fish they tested. The Interior Department said, even in isolated rural waterways. In a statement, the department said that some of the streams tested were affected by mining operations, you know, like when you blow the tops off of mountains, which can be a source of mercury pollution. So the findings by scientists of the United States Geological Survey do not necessarily reflect contamination levels nationwide, but Interior Secretary Ken Salazar said the findings underline the need to act against mercury pollution. Emissions from coal-fired power plants are the largest source of mercury contamination in the United States. A quarter of the fish studied had mercury levels above safety levels set by the EPA for people who eat fish regularly. So, mercury contamination in every... This is not deep water ocean fish. This is fish in the United States within our borders, so you can rest assured it also includes Canada and Mexico, at least those parts of Canada and Mexico that are affected by upper-level wind patterns that take the pollution that we generate from coal-fired plants and get very democratic about it and spread it to two other countries. But I mentioned the other night that there will be an effort now by the energy industry to paint any attempt to cut back on these murder emissions as an attempt to destroy the energy industry and to socialize and communize everything, you know, more the Barack Obama administration. The people who are going to these meetings, who are employees of various aspects of the energy industry, whether it is coal companies or oil companies or whatever it is, they are people who will be led to protest against an attempt to save their lives. Mercury contamination, mercury poisoning in children is particularly dangerous and toxic. But the people who are going to be screaming and stamping their feet and hollering, "Now by the Bella!" or whatever the hell they're going to hire, they will get their orders from Beck if he ever comes back and doesn't kill himself, or the pig man if he can stay sober long enough to issue marching orders, or the bunny ranch boy, Sean Hannity. They will give the orders, and these people will go out and demand that there be no cap and trade, no attempt, and even cap and trade is kind of a crappy idea, but no attempt whatsoever to reduce these atmospheric emissions that are destroying the planet. And in so doing, they will be deliberately acting against the interests of their own children and grandchildren and unborn children. It's amazing, isn't it? Every single fish tested contaminated with mercury. Okay, let's do some trivia. We're talking with Joey in Decatur, Alabama, right?
Right. How you doing, Mike?
I'm okay. Let's hear some theme music first. Oh, my God. I picked it up without doing it. Got to have the theme music. Here we go. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it is time for podcast trivia on the Malloy Show. Our guest tonight will win one of three gifts: a one-year subscription to the Malloy Program podcast downloads, a brand new Mercedes, or a trip to Monaco. Oh, wait, we're out of the last two. Oh, I'm sorry, but we do have the podcast subscriptions. That'll work, won't it, Joey?
Yeah, my hopes up, man.
All right, let's give it a shot.
All right.
What does George Bush consider his greatest hidden talent? Okay? Here we go. A, his knowledge of obscure baseball trivia. B, his ability to pat his head and simultaneously rub his tummy. C, riding his bicycle while eating pretzels. Or D, he can hold his breath a really long time.
I gotta go with A, Mike.
A?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we don't have any music. We don't have any winter music. You won! All right!
Thanks a lot.
All right, Joey, stay there. Kathy will get the pertinent information from you, and way to go. All right, Joey in Alabama, Decatur, Alabama, wins. And we will be doing this twice more tonight, once at the bottom of each hour. Okay? Super, Joey. Now, if you're holding on to do trivia, go ahead and hang up, and we will take you back on the line when we play the next round, okay? I started to mention this before we got Larissa on the phone. The stories that are breaking coming Monday, according to Michael Isikoff, who writes for Newsweek, a report is going to be released that talks about further means of torturing people. It wasn't just waterboarding and smashing their head against walls. It was also fake executions and firing squads and some really bad stuff that we have, this country, the administration ordered. And, of course, we're complicit in it because these were our leaders and we never did anything to remove the sons of bitches from office. So you and I cannot escape responsibility from this. I hate to think that I am partly responsible, but I am because, you know, I still live in a government or in a country that has a Well, wait a minute. Do we still have a Democrat? No, I guess we don't. On the other hand, we have representatives in Congress who could do have the power, or did have the power, still do, to impeach a criminal, a felon like George W. Bush or Dick Cheney. And of course, we did nothing too seriously and wholeheartedly and with immense pressure and serious determination. We did not apply pressure to Nancy Pelosi to impeach the bastard. So you and I are complicit. There's no way to get around it. Just the same way as nobody rose up and assassinated Hitler. I realize there were a couple of attempts, but the people of Germany allowed their country to go right into fascism. The people of Italy did the same thing until finally they realized what had happened to them. And then they tracked down Mussolini and his mistress. And ooh, did they do bad things to them? You can find the pictures on the web of what the Italian partisans did to Mussolini and his mistress. The other thing that is happening is the phoniness of all the terror alerts. Remember all those terror alerts ever since 2002 or whenever it was? It turns out that there was instance after instance after instance over those horrible years. Do you remember? Oh, they're going to attack L.A. airport. Oh, they're going to blow up Kennedy. Oh, they're going to do this. Oh, they're going to attack oil platforms in the Gulf of Mexico. Oh, they're going to blow up a subway. Oh, they're going to destroy the Capitol building. Oh, they're going to get the Sears Tower. Oh, my God. And in every single instance, that hysteria was generated by the Bush crime family to divert attention away from the criminal acts that they were perpetrating against the Constitution, and by extension, against us. It's hard to comprehend for me. Maybe it's easy for you, but not for me. It's not easy. It's very difficult to understand just how much damage Bush and Cheney and John Yoo and Gonzalez and the rest of these people, Rice, Colin Powell, how much damage they did to this country. It's hard for me to comprehend the destruction that they perpetrated with their allies in corporate America, where it concerns lies and death and deception and wars and invasions and murder and mayhem. And I don't know if in whatever time I have left on the planet, if I'll ever be able to really get my mind around what these sons of bitches did. It's just astonishing. Stay with us.
It's Mike Malone.
It's 10 before the hour. Dana Jill Simpson, who Karl Rove maligned in his Wall Street Journal op-ed piece yesterday, has responded. I'll share that with you when we get into the next hour. And also, Prairie 2 has a piece tonight, but that we'll get to. But outside his role as our economics correspondent, he sent me this quickie regarding the Department of Justice and why things are not happening there. As Prairie 2 points out, Senate Republicans have been holding up all Department of Justice appointments from top to bottom. Why the Senate Democrats are putting up with this isn't clear. Cleaning these people out without replacements available would probably cause more problems than the Attorney General and Obama want to deal with right now. If I were him, I'd go with recess appointments. Yeah, that's exactly what he should do. So, I don't understand the cowardice of the Democrats. They're dealing with murderous Nazis who want to destroy the country, are well on the way to destroying the country in terms of being a democratic republic. You can almost see the end of days where it concerns this being a democratic republic to the extent that we still are. I mean, arguably, somebody can make a very coherent case that we are no longer that anyway. But we still have the documents. We haven't written, as Hitler did, we haven't rewritten the essential documents to this country yet, although the Republicans keep trying to do that. We should be paying closer attention. Word has come down that, this is the political director, Becky Bond from Credo Action. Credo is part of Working Assets. Dear Mike, I'm delighted to let you know that we received confirmation today that Verizon is no longer advertising on the Glenn Beck Show. Colorofchange.org has done amazing work to bring national awareness to Beck's race-baiting commentary on Fox News Channel. In the last few weeks, over 20 companies, including Walmart, CVS, Best Buy, Travelocity, and so on, have confirmed that they have ceased advertising on the show or placed Glenn Beck's program on a do not air list. It was only a month ago that Beck declared on Fox News Channel, quote, "This president has exposed himself as a guy over and over and over again who has a deep-seated hatred of white people. This guy is, I believe, a racist," end quote. The response of corporate advertising distancing themselves from Beck's despicable remarks is encouraging. But these baseless, racist, and increasingly dangerous attacks also reveal just how far the right-wing media machine will go to try and stop our movement for change. Becky Bond, political director, Credo Action. colorofchange.org, I guess, has proved without a doubt that these pigs can be affected. It's also my understanding that Beck was ordered, I think it came directly from Murdoch, because one thing Murdoch does not want, he's lost enough money on Fox News Channel in getting it going. It's I think it's making money now, but for the first 10 years of its existence, I think it lost in the billions. So if there's one thing Murdoch, like most corporate sons of bitches, thugs, killers, there's one thing he understands, it's profit. And the profit on his network comes from advertising. That's the only place it comes from. So it's my understanding that Beck was ordered from no less a person than Rupert Murdoch to get his ass out of Dodge for at least a week until things quieted down. It's that old trick, when Willie Sutton would rob a bank, he would go to his hideout and stare at the walls until the heat calmed down a little bit. Glenn Beck is a thug. He should be removed from the airwaves because he is anti-American. He hates the country. He wants to bring it down for sport. That's all. It's not because he is he doesn't have any particular political leanings. He's just a thug. And he's a very, 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 very wealthy thug. So destroying the country, like the same, he's not as wealthy as the pig man, the drug-addled Rush Limbaugh, but they do it for the same reason, because it's fun and because they can. They're like dogs who squat every 10 feet and lick their crotches. They do it because they can. So good news that Beck has losing all this advertising and been ordered off the air for a week because of his racist statement. Of course, I wonder if the advertisers are aware of this other stuff he says.
I'm thinking about killing Michael Moore.
Ah.
And I'm wondering if I could kill him myself, or if I would need to hire somebody to do it. I think I could. I think he could be looking me in the eye, and I could just be choking the life out. Is this wrong? I stopped wearing my What Would Jesus Band Do, and I've lost the whole sense of right and wrong now. I used to be able to say, yeah, I'd kill Michael Moore, and then I'd see the little band, What Would Jesus Do? And then I'd realize, oh, he wouldn't kill Michael Moore.
No, he wouldn't.
At least he wouldn't choke him to death.
Wouldn't choke him. You know.
Well, I'm not sure.
Not so sure. Maybe Jesus would, right, Glenn? You goddamn psychopath, you. What a goddamn psychopath. Regarding that, we have some from Pensito Review, result of a couple of polls, and they're really, really interesting. I want to share with you about what Fox News is doing to the people who watch that toilet during the day, who go to that. It's just incredible. I mean, Fox, in its entire history, somebody pointed out, has never broken a story, has never performed the functions that a news organization is supposed to perform. Never, not once. And that's no surprise, because it is nothing more or less than a propaganda apparatus to further the fortunes of Rupert Murdoch and to bring fascism to the United States. Seven past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Hour two, coming up at the bottom of this hour, we're going to give away another podcast subscription, free, courtesy of just a whole clutch of listeners who have contributed most on an anonymous basis these subscriptions, and we do appreciate it. So you can get one very quickly here. Pensito Review has a poll out. Huge. The headline is, huge majorities of Fox viewers duped by Republican lies about health care reform. 75% of Fox viewers believe in the death panels. I mean, this is astonishing. I mean, it really is. The website said, just days after a poll found Fox News to be the least trustworthy among the cable channels, a new poll from NBC News, not teaming up this time with Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal, NBC News finds that around three-quarters of self-identified Fox viewers believe the four big lies being put out by the Republicans about health insurance reform. Results as alarmingly bad as these would cause a panic at a real news organization. Here are the four lies that these poor, miserable bastards who watch Fox News, oh my God, 72% believe undocumented aliens will be covered. They will not. 79% believe this is going to lead to a government takeover of everything. 69% believe abortions will be covered. 75% believe there will be death panels. Now, all of this has been refuted umpteen times by nonpartisan sources, including factcheck.org, which is a hell of a site to go to. You should check it out. What's his name? He used to work for, I forget his name. He's the spokesman. I think he used to work for CBS News or was it ABC. Factcheck.org. All of this is lie. All of these are lies. Every single one. And yet, the Fox viewers believe it to be true. When you have that kind of a disconnect from reality, how are we supposed to function as a democratic republic? Well, the quick answer is, we will not. Pensito says, results as alarmingly bad as these would cause a panic at a real news organization. Senior managers' jobs would be in jeopardy. And the taint of having worked for a so-called news organization so irredeemably incompetent would discredit everyone involved. But no heads will roll at Fox. In fact, there may be raises. Because the real indictment here is that these results expose Fox for what it really is, a propaganda outlet for the Republican Party and the corporate interests who own it, the Republican Party. The results of these polls are a damning indictment, though, of Fox News, anyway you slice it. They'll probably be rewarded at Fox. Murdoch, remember, Murdoch is in Australia. No offense to our listeners in Oz. He's an Australian who tried to buy the New York Post, I think is where this all started, and he was denied because he wasn't an American citizen. And there were some problems in his getting citizenship, and it was Newt Gingrich who paved the way for Rupert Murdoch to become an American. And as a result, when Murdoch did become an American citizen, he started buying up television stations and newspapers and publishing houses. One of the first things he did was pay back for Newt and publishing one of Newt's propaganda books. Now, what they're referring to about the least trustworthy, John Ponder writing at Pensito Review and John Ponder at this, Fox News is indisputably the most popular cable news channel. And yet in 13 years, Fox has never broken a story. That's okay because it's not in the news business. It's in the news shaping business. Its programming is a mixture of right-wing propaganda and fear porn and feeble-minded paranoics served up by spokesmodels who have no clue what they are reading. It's incredible. Daily Kos Research 2000 conducted a poll. Republicans watch Fox News and nothing else. Democrats split between MSNBC and CNN, and independents watch nothing. MSNBC in particular depends on Democrats for the vast majority of its audience. One would think they'd realize this and get rid of Joe Scarborough to boost its morning ratings. The South, unlike the rest of the country, appears to have their TV dials stuck on Fox News, except for the youth, that is. 82% of 18 to 29-year-old respondents never watched Fox News Channel. When asked to rate the trustworthiness of the channels, Fox was called trustworthy by just 35% and untrustworthy by 41%. Among Southerners, 46% found Fox to be reliable, while only 25% did not. In the Northeast, 27% found Fox to be credible, while 55% did not, and so on and so on and so on. As Daily Kos put it, quote, Republicans and the South obviously think Fox is the word of God, while Democrats think it's excrement, only they use the S word. As if more evidence of the effectiveness of Fox brainwashing were needed, only 6% of Republicans found MSNBC to be credible. Oh, my God. People like Rupert Murdoch and the stable of bully boys that he has put out there, whether it is the thugs on talk radio or the thugs on his television show or the brain-dead people who sit there and put this garbage out, the stable that he's put together, it's got to be the worst collection of morons. Compare them to, I don't know, let's pick somebody. Hell, just compare him to Charlie Gibson. You don't have to compare him to Edward R. Murrow or Richard C. Hodlett or Walter Cronkite. Just compare him to Charlie Gibson. Oh, my God. They also mention here at Pensito what has happened to Glenn Beck's filthy program. They go down the list again. Radio Shack, Men's Warehouse, State Farm, Sargento, Procter & Gamble, they've all left. And as Ponder points out, at a real news organization, Beck would be held accountable for his comments. Not surprisingly, Fox management has been silent on the controversy, which of course makes them complicit. It's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's one thing. And don't forget the lawsuit that Fox, a local Fox affiliate won with the help of Rupert Murdoch's corporate staff in Florida several years ago. And the lawsuit was brought by a listener who, or a viewer who said Fox News Channel was lying. And it went to court. And the evidence was, of course, Fox News Channel was lying. That wasn't the issue. The issue was whether or not Fox News Channel had a right to broadcast knowingly lies. And the court ruled, yes, it did. Now, once that decision was handed down by a court in Florida, who would continue to watch this amalgamation of morons, idiots, propagandists, and fascists? Who? Well, here in the South, a lot of people. Yeah, I love that old Fox News Channel. You're goddamn right. Because they're Christians. You can just tell. Man. Be still, my beating heart. It just gets crazier and crazier. There's something I want to share with you that I first did it on the air, oh my God, probably 8 years ago. It was a piece written by Clint Gold for the Tulsa Review newspaper. I think it was the Tulsa Review. I'm not sure. Tulsa World. It was about 10 years ago. And Clint Gold is a former mayor of Moore, Oklahoma, retired savings and loan executive. But I want to share it with you a little bit later tonight, so stick around, okay? I'm Mike Malloy.
They chained my mind to an endless tomb when they took my only son from me. I know it's true, oh so true, 'cause I saw it on TV. I know it's true, oh so true.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Yeah, do that. 21 past the hour. You might find this interesting, although I realize that some people are grandparents, young grandparents, but grandparents nonetheless, now, and were not born when this happened. I'm talking about the My Lai Massacre in March of 1968. Maybe stretching a little bit on the grandparent thing. It's only 41 years ago, but you know what I'm saying. Sure, very easily, you know, people who are 40 years old right now might have a six-month-old grandchild. Anyway, William Calley, the former lieutenant, Army lieutenant, convicted on 22 counts of murder at the My Lai Massacre in Vietnam, for the first time publicly apologized. He was at a speaking engagement in Columbus, Georgia, which is where he lives. He told members of the Kiwanis Club of Greater Columbus day before yesterday, quote, "There's not a day that goes by that I do not feel remorse for what happened that day in My Lai. I feel remorse for the Vietnamese who were killed, for their families, for the American soldiers involved and their families. I am very sorry," end quote. His voice started to break as he was speaking. And for the folks who don't know what I'm talking about or don't care, in March of 68, U.S. soldiers gunned down hundreds of civilians in the Vietnamese hamlet of My Lai. They were herded into a ditch, not unlike what Mark Twain reported that the Marines did in the Spanish-American War in the Philippines, what our guys did. Back then, 100 and some years ago, as Twain reported, American Marines herded an entire village into the dead volcano cone of a volcano, a cone that was no longer there, set up their Gatling guns around the rim and opened fire, and several hundred Filipino peasants, mostly women and children, were butchered. My Lai was the same thing. 75 years later, U.S. soldiers gunned down hundreds of civilians in My Lai. The army at first denied, then downplayed the event, saying most of the dead were Viet Cong. But in November 1969, journalist Seymour Hersh revealed what really happened, and Callie was court-martialed and convicted of murder. The part that's not in the article in the Columbus, Georgia Ledger Inquirer newspaper is the fact that Richard Nixon pardoned Callie. Callie served, I think, a total of 2 or 3 months of house arrest and then went on to enjoy a life as a jeweler in Columbus, Georgia. Callie had long refused to grant interviews about what happened, but this past Wednesday spoke at this Kiwanis meeting. He made only a brief statement, but he agreed to take questions from the audience. He did not deny what happened that day, but did repeatedly make the point, which he has made before, that he was only following orders. Only following orders. Coming up after this break, we are going to give away another Malloy subscription to the podcast, commercial-free podcast. So jump in here during the break. From Prairie 2, the Fed chairman says the economy has bottomed out, maybe. And he plans to stop buying Treasury bonds in October, maybe. Maybe is the operative word with the chairman. And last year, that was maybe just a market panic, nothing serious. The Fed has passed out $24 trillion in the past 2 years to keep the big banks afloat. Nothing serious, folks. Just a panic. Back to reality. We set another new record for delinquent mortgages. Grinding unemployment is dragging down fixed-rate mortgage holders. New unemployment claims were up unexpectedly and are again approaching 600,000 per week, not counting people with no eligibility for benefits. Oil is being run up by speculators, and this is putting a drag on the economy. The dollar has been up since last year's panic, but Europe is recovering since they didn't abandon their workers and have been stimulating from the bottom up. With the euro recovering, this will eventually drive the dollar right to the basement. And if the euro doesn't do it, there's always China. They have been keeping their currency artificially low since they already take in more dollars than they can ever spend since we don't make anything. At some point, China will stop propping up the dollar and imports of any kind will become impossible to pay for. Swine flu, however, is on the upswing. The H1N1 virus doubles every 3 days in dry air, and with fall comes cool, dry air. Forget buying masks. Buy a humidifier. The virus has been identified in turkey flocks. Not a big deal for the turkeys, but for us it might be. As this virus moves around from people to pigs to turkeys and back again, it produces uncountable mutations. Almost all of them are not viable. Almost all of them. Almost. It's a race to see if everybody gets the relatively harmless version before a deadly one develops. Don't let the Fed chairman sneeze on you. Prairie 2, handicapping the four horses of the apocalypse. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. Oh, man. If it weren't for bad news, there'd be no news. Oh, wait, no, here's a song. Wrapping brains and metal trays to keep us from the heat. Someone's found a way to give the rotting dead a will to live for one. This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it is our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option.
Real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the...
It's time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for Malloy Podcast Trivia. It is indeed. We're in. We will take one hapless... Oh, I'm sorry. One lucky listener, put him or her on the air and ask a question with the possibility, well, not the possibility, the reality of four possible answers, only one of which is correct. If he or she gets the correct answer, that's a winner! Where are the questions? Oh, here they are. Okay. We really appreciate the fact that... just a whole group of Malloy program listeners who are still employed are sending in these gift subscriptions. I mentioned the other day we had a doctor who purchased 20 of them and sent them to us. Another guy that we just got word today, 10, 15? Was it 15? It's astonishing. All right. Who is our lucky first contestant? It's Jeremy in Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Hey, good.
All right, you ready for this?
Sure.
Don't get overly enthused. You'll give yourself a nosebleed. All right. Name the author of the following quote. Here's the quote. As you know, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you might want or wish to have at a later time. Was it Dick Cheney, George Bush, Condoleezza Rice, or Donald Rumsfeld?
Ronald Rumsfeld.
Donald Rumsfeld. Oh, my God. Jeremy, you just won. All right. Way to go. Are you happy? Is this one of the happiest days of your life?
I'm stoked.
All right.
Hey, can I make a comment?
No. Yes, of course you can. Go ahead.
Hey, I just, you were talking about how these people hate our country, right?
Right, right.
And it's a fact. Actually, Heritage Foundation founder Paul Weyrich wrote an article in the Washington Post in 87 actually saying that the Constitution is obsolete.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we can't have a strong foreign policy and secure domestic liberty at the same time. So there shouldn't be any doubt, you know. I mean, seriously. And what's unsaid about that is that the government to support this foreign policy has to be huge, gargantuan.
Oh, yeah. And,
so anyway,
and the biggest part has to be what Eisenhower warned us all about back in 1959, the military-industrial complex. I read something the other day. Once again, I mean, this number keeps popping up. It was either 60 or 62%. Of all the money that the federal government gets its hands on goes to the defense industry or the weapons industry, 62%.
And what it really is, too, is it's not just for defense.
No,
it's
of course not.
It's a big scam to subsidize high-tech companies. I mean, you name it. You know, every single penny that goes through there basically is just a big, huge corporate welfare scam. So if anyone wants to read that article, it's posted at SweetLiberty.org.
Sweet.
I really want to see what these people have in mind.
SweetLiberty.org?
Yeah, it's called A Conservative's Lament.
A Conservative's Lament. Oh,
from
my.
From the horse is that, I mean, now.
You had it right the first time.
Yeah.
All right, Jeremy, thanks. Hold on. Kathy will come on the phone here and get the pertinent information. Thanks, Jeremy. And congratulations. We're going to give away one more in about an hour, so stick around for that. This would be a good time as any to re-share with you Clint Gold's article. It was an op-ed piece he wrote for the Tulsa World newspaper 10 years ago. I'll just share the whole thing with you. He writes, "Not too long ago, my wife and I attended a TV football party in South Tulsa. With a lopsided score, the conversation turned to a livelier subject, politics. The crowd was, of course, top-heavy with Republicans. With each point expressed, their faces became more flushed, eyes bulging a little more, and veins popping in their foreheads as they railed against the liberal programs. Finally, a lone liberal voice asked, "Will you people name me one bill your party ever passed to help the working man of this country?" The question created much din and clamor, and someone sputtered, "Well, what have the Democrats done?" The liberal responded with a few programs and was interrupted by howling and disdain. He noted that he had not promised they would like the programs, and he asked to complete his statement, a difficult task to ask of Republicans. He went on. He spoke of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and the Peace Corps and unemployment insurance, welfare for the poor and corporations, civil rights, student grant and loan programs, safety laws, environmental laws, prevailing wage laws, the right to collective bargaining, which brought about in its turn paid medical insurance, paid vacations, pensions, and so forth, workers' compensation, the Marshall Plan, flood disaster insurance, school lunch programs, women's rights. And he went on. He spoke of the Fair Labor Standards Act, which established a minimum wage, instituted child labor laws, and set up time and a half pay for over a 40-hour week. He mentioned FHA and HUD with its public housing, urban renewal, and 44 million residential homes. He also pointed out that before World War II, almost 70% of our nation were renters. By the 1970s, this had been reversed. And farm conservation subsidies, U.S. Department of Agriculture programs, Farmers Home Administration. You see, the bankers didn't want to make rural loans. Small flood control lakes, rural water districts, rural electricity. The GI Bill was passed, which the Republicans at the time bitterly opposed. They were salivating over millions of returning veterans to hire as cheap labor. More than 8 million have used college benefits, creating millions of entrepreneurs. Most of us had never dreamed of college. For the unemployed GI, there was $20 a week for 52 weeks to help get started. It was a lot of money in those days. The Veterans Administration provided more than 2 million home loans. For the bankers at the football party, it was pointed out that the liberals saved their industry with the creation of the FDIC and the FSLIC, insuring their deposits, and saved Wall Street with the establishment of the Securities and Exchange Commission. The oil men came on bended knee to FDR at the time when East Texas oil was 4 cents a barrel and begged him to save their industry. He did. Pro-rationing overturned the rule of capture and the days of flush production were over. Pro-rating has served this great industry and nation well. And the list went on and on. But of course, this group didn't let him get halfway through. He noted they were weary, inattentive, so again he challenged them to offer up any Republican legislation examples. He said, "I'm sure your party has authored one or two comparable bills from time to time, but I can't think of any, and apparently you can't either. What it boils down to is this. The liberals dragged you into the 20th century scratching and screaming with your heels in the mud, fighting anything that's progressive, everything that's made this country great. You Republicans have never understood that the spending power of blue-collar workers obtained through Democrats and unions is what really made this country great. You really believe the so-called good life was obtained from your own endeavors. You cloak your greed in religion and patriotism, railing against any form of tax, never comprehending that these programs have benefited all of us and our country." Well, I almost didn't make it out of the house. My wife and I didn't even get to see the end of the football game. Pity. Clint Gold is a former mayor of Moore, Oklahoma, and a retired savings and loan executive. You can get this if you Google, "What has GOP done for workers?" Like I said, I first read this on the air. I don't know. It was right around the time it was written, about 10 years ago. And it's starting to pop up again and at various websites. I think Bart Kopp has this up. I think BuzzFlash has it up. And it's worth having, just having a copy of it. So when the people you know, the psychopaths who watch Fox News or, you know, insist that they're Republicans, you can just whip it out and give them a copy. "What has GOP done for workers? What has GOP done for workers?" Just do a Google on it and it'll come up. All right. Let's open up the lines and take some phone calls. All right? Not trivia. Phone calls. What else have I got here? A lot of stuff, but it's just... some of it was just too overwhelming. Oh! Remember, you can give us a call if you want to get on the air. 877-996-2556. Remember, for those of you who have been following the ups and downs of my little radio adventure all these years, remember I've talked about many times about how all the Republicans wanted to see during the impeachment against Clinton was his penis. Remember, because who was it? The trailer park girl who said his. What was her name? Paula Jones said that Bill Clinton's penis had marks on it. It was distinguishable because of some certain... And the Republicans all wanted to see it. They wanted to get him in court and get him to drop his pants. That was what motivated them. They had to see Bill Clinton's penis. Well, history is repeating itself, and I'll tell you why when we come back. In a little while, also, we have a musical interlude for you tonight. It's not Who Stole the Kishka or Waltzing Matilda, but I think you're going to like it. We need to get up and dance. This is from, who's it from? Oh, damn. Can't tell who it's from. Anyway, Mike, I've always loved your accurate statement that conservatives hounded Bill Clinton because they wanted to see his penis. You said they would not be satisfied until they got to see it. Turns out that's the goal of the birthers. And what CW, I guess it's CW, has sent me here is a link to a thread at freerepublic.com. Here's a couple of the posts. Read a copy of Larry Sinclair's book this afternoon. Quick read. The list of characters who attacked his character being names we see regularly and a few attached to Axelrod. The only thing that hit me was that Sinclair said Barack Obama was not circumcised. When my son was born in a hospital, that was done as a matter of routine without even consulting us. Would the same be true for Hawaii? On the other hand, people born at home or in some other culture are not circumcised. And then this post. A relative of mine was born a couple of years after Barack Obama's alleged birth date. He was circumcised also. Then the next freak. My son was born in June of 1961 in a hospital in California. The nurses released us because of miscommunication and a day and a half before the circumcision was done. We had to go back to the doctor's office to have it done a week later, and the doctor was not happy. My second son was born in the same hospital 4 years later. I don't remember them asking about it. Routine procedure for little boys. Next freak. Wish we had someone to make a phone call to the hospital, misspelled, in Hawaii, and ask if they routinely do circumcision and when that practice started. Next freak. Worldwide prevalence. The U.S. is the only country in the world that routinely circumcises most of its male infants for non-religious reasons. Over 80% of the world's males are intact. Next freak. If indeed Barack Obama is intact, as Sinclair states, might this be another indication that he was born outside the U.S.? Next freak. I'm having a vision of a courtroom scene. The judge turns to Obama sitting in the witness chair to his left and says, I'm sorry, Mr. President, but I'm going to have to ask you to stand up and drop your trousers. Oh, my God. This is the kind of discourse you find if you are sick enough to go to, unless you're a spy like my communicant there, but if you go to Free Republic, what a nest of jackasses. Oh my God. You wanted to see Clinton's penis. Now you want to see Barack Obama's. You know why this is? It's because these boys have little teeny stubs. That's why they carry big old guns. And they can eat all the Viagra and Cialis and all this other garbage that they want. It's not going to happen, boys. I'm sorry. Sorry, it's just not going to happen. You need to go buy a bigger gun or a bigger magazine for your gun or get one that is semi-automatic or fully automatic. Just don't tell anybody. You can do it. You little twits. Oh, my God. Can you imagine being a right-winger? Can you imagine being someone who posts comments at freerepublic.com? Oh. So they want to see Barack Obama's penis just the same way they wanted to see Bill Clinton's. I'll bet you boys do, don't you? Huh? I'll bet you really do. Oh, no. Really? All right. Eric is in Nottingham, PA. Hey, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. I just ride down the road.
Yeah, I know, and you have to turn in and hear me talking about all that garbage the Democrats did, right?
Yeah, well, you know.
And it just made a nation of slaves, didn't it?
Basically.
Yeah, okay. What else you got there, Eric? Hey, by the way, do you take advantage of any of that stuff that, are you a slave?
No, you know what?
No, are you a slave?
No, I'm not.
So you don't
work independently.
Oh.
And I depend on myself.
Do you, have you ever called the, have you ever, hey, yo, Eric, have you ever called the police? What are you driving on? Are you flying on a magic carpet? God damn it, Eric, get off my road. That road was paid for with my tax dollars. Your kids go to public school? Ah, your kids go to public school? Ah! You ever use the fire department? Hey, how about your parents, Eric? Do they get Social Security or Medicare or Medicaid? Hey, have you ever worked at a union job? Is any relative you've been? Go away, Eric. Go away. Go away. Why do these people call me? He's responding, this poor, miserable driver down the road listening, just happened to tell your station. Yeah. And he hears me talk, share the Clinton Gold article that was written 10 years ago about all the stuff Republicans have not done, all the stuff liberals have done to make this country great. I'll bet this dumb bastard never served in the military, never did anything, never went to college, never went to VA. I'm independent. No, you're not. You just think you are. Jerkwad. Jesus. Independent. Yeah, sure you are. You and Glenn Beck, huh? Oh. Yeah, don't touch my highway there, boy. Get your goddamn wheels off my highway. You're not on my highway, are you? And don't stop at any of my state parks or federal parks. Don't you ever take your family out to Yellowstone or any other where place like that. Don't you dare. It ain't yours. And if your house catches on fire, just whip it out and pee on it. Try to put it out that way. Don't you call one of them fire departments, you know, them socialist communist fire. Where did the, I bet he watches Fox News. Don't listen to this program. I'm serious. Switch over to something else. Don't listen to the Malloy Show. I don't want your listening corrupting everything. Get. It's 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. I don't know if we're going to get to Dana Jo Simpson's response to the garbage that Karl Rove wrote and Rupert Murdoch's Wall Street Journal published yesterday, but we'll try. If we don't get to it tonight, we will get to it. And don't forget, coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll give away another podcast subscription to The Malloy Show, commercial-free and paid for by a benefactor. And in just a few minutes, we are going to have a dance intermission. So get ready for that. You're going to get up and dance, move around, get your blood circulating. Gail is in Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hi, Gail.
Hi, Mike. I'm a longtime listener, and you say everything that I'm thinking, but so much better than I could.
Well, we may be on the same wavelength, but I'll bet you could say the same thing. I'll bet you could.
Well, what I wanted to talk about was these Republicans are so stupid. Their president did not even include the Iraq war in the budget. And now they're so incredibly concerned about deficit spending. But I think what they're really saying is that they don't want any money spent on ethnic health care.
Or anything. They don't want, you know, unless it involves them. I think the reason Bush was instructed to not put the cost of the death and destruction in Iraq in the budget was because they were keeping it off budget. That's why they kept talking about emergency supplements. If that would have been on budget, the deficit that Bush would have been operating with would have been in probably in the trillions, just like it is now for Barack Obama. So they're liars and cheats and sneaks. That's the thing about Republicans.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're blaming Obama for all these deficits. When the Iraq, if we hadn't have spent all that money on the Iraq war, we would have plenty of money to spend on health care for every American.
Well, that's very true. In addition to that, Gail, if you go back to the wars that we have perpetrated against innocent civilian populations since the end of World War II, if you take all of them into consideration, oh my goodness, not just health care, but we could probably build everybody a mini mansion. Hey, thanks, Gail. I appreciate you checking in. You ready to dance? Oh, wait, is she driving? I guess she can't dance, but, all right. We're going to take, a musical, interlude here. This piece was written by, Rossini, and it's, performed by the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra under the, baton of Claudio Abbado, and I want you to get up and dance to this one. Think of the Lone Ranger. Don't. Okay, here's the slow part. Well, not slow, but do 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 do. Come on, don't give up. Come on, let's go, let's go. Here it comes again. Here comes the big part. Here comes the big part. You ready? Ha 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 finish. Here comes the finish. Tell you what, the Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra. Well, that was good, huh? Let's see if your talk show host can get enough oxygen in to continue. Man, I love that. There are certain little bits and pieces in classical music that just, I don't know, get me outside of my head, right? I mean, just completely, kind of like Pink Floyd. But the William Tell Overture is one that does that. Somebody said to me one time after listening to that, I can't help but think about horses. Okay, Jamie is in Trenton, New Jersey. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I want to talk about the right-wing, the Republican evangelist ability to manipulate anything.
Right.
Okay. Okay, here's an example. All right. There's this female being harassed by some local authorities. And this Republican, he's a right-winger, says to her that, well, just go up the chain,
uh-huh.
Knowing full well that you can't because they're just going to back what the local cop is doing.
Right.
In fact, it would be dangerous for her. So while he's saying that, for the audio, for the visual, he's smiling like a Cheshire cat, knowing full well that you can't and won't do it, and instead has to resort to other options, like for protection, like going to the press just to protect herself. And he knows that that will somehow look bad on her unless it's understood that she's doing it for protection. They are masterful at disguising their true motivations.
Yeah.
They are masterful at deceit. They just plain out lie. They make it up as they go.
They do indeed.
How in the hell does a party of such deceit manage to survive?
I don't know.
Somebody needs to explain this to me.
Well,
somebody has to explain this to me.
Well, I think what it is, Jamie, is the reason they survive is because the truth is, we are the most politically unsavvy herd of idiots ever created. I mean, people in villages in the most primitive areas of the planet have a better understanding of how power works and how people have a voice than we do. But see, our ignorance and our stupidity is willful. There's no reason for anybody in this country to display the kind of ignorance that your typical Republican or Fox News viewer or FreeRepublic.com poster moron displays. There's no reason for it. So therefore, it has to be willful. And that's the reason these people just don't interest me on any level except in a sense of utter contempt because the ignorance is willful. They choose it.
In the White House, we just don't care. The star's little kid and he dyes his hair. Now what could make him think that way? What could make him act that way? He's just a right-wing pigeon from outer space. Fated to destroy the human race. Don't
This portion of the Mike Malloy Show is brought to you by Patriot Majority. Patriot Majority believes it's our patriotic duty as Americans to pass health care reform now with a strong public plan option. Past the hour, Terry in Bark River, Michigan writes, Mike, if Jesus had been a Republican, or publican as they called him in those days, he would have told Lazarus, I'm sorry, Lazarus, but you have a pre-existing condition. But Jesus, the liberal, said, Lazarus, rise up and come to me. Okay, thanks, Terry. Yeah, that's so true, isn't it? Huh? You know what I mean. Tim is in Detroit listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. And Jesus didn't require a deductible either.
No deductible, unless it was a box of dates or something. I don't know.
I wanted to talk about something you brought up earlier regarding, I think it was the Chamorro Massacre in the Philippines.
Yes, uh-huh.
And I had heard this from Howard Zinn, a famous history professor at Harvard.
Yeah, I'm familiar with him.
He was in a speech with Amy Goodman years ago. It might have been around 2005 or whatever it was, and he talked about there was a series of correspondences between the commander of that massacre and President Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
And the commander informed the president in detail of how the massacre was going to be taken out, specifically on civilians in this volcanic crater.
Mm-hmm.
And the president heartily approved. And when the massacre finally occurred, the president, in writing, actually completely approved and was very happy that this massacre occurred. There has been in this country, this incredible history of mayhem all the way to the top, and it probably explains why a lot of these morons at the bottom, you know, who go to these town hall meetings have these attitudes, because these attitudes are sort of taught in our system, you know, to hate people of color, to be extremely intolerant, to have a disdain for the facts, to have a disdain for any sort of true patriotism which is being devoted to a country of progress.
Mm.
And so, you know, what's going on, that is sort of a logical conclusion of what's been going on for centuries.
Yeah, it is. And as I mentioned on this program several times, Mark Twain wrote about the massacre. He was a war correspondent for a while there for, I believe, the Baltimore Sun. And that's where I first came across a report of that, because the United States was backing, as a result of our defeating Spain in Spanish-American War, we were backing one group of Philippine rebels against another group. And I think what got Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt, so thrilled, don't forget, he was our first internationalist warmonger. The charge up San Juan Hill, the Rough Riders.
That's a myth too, isn't it, by the way?
Well, you know, if it's a myth, okay. But what was going on, that Roosevelt was so happy about was the invention of the Gatling gun.
That's right. It was used, I think, in the Chamorro Massacre.
That was the first time it had been used in, a quote, combat situation, unquote. Of course, there was no combat. It was murder. So, I think that's what got Teddy Roosevelt so happy and excited was, being the, outdoorsman and hunter and gun nut that he was. He was very interested in the, efficacy of this new weapon called the Gatling gun, because it meant that, if it worked, you know, without the barrel locking up or the chamber melting or whatever, if it worked, it all of a sudden increased an individual's firepower by a factor of 100 or 1,000 or 10,000.
Weren't flamethrowers also used, I think, in the Philippines?
I'm sorry?
Weren't flamethrowers also used? And I know they were used in World War II, but weren't they also used way back, I think, as far back as the Philippines, flamethrowers?
I'm not sure when they came out, but I just remember reading about that massacre from Mark Twain, of all people. Hey, Tim, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. We have a break coming. When we come back from the break, we're going to do the final podcast trivia event of the evening. We will give you a question, and you'll have multiple choice answers to choose from. And if you get it right, bingo, you win a free one-year podcast subscription, Malloy download, freebie, no commercials kind of thing, right? Michelle is in Seattle listening on XM. Hey, Michelle.
Hi, how's it going tonight, Mike?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just was listening to some comments about unions, and as a union member and raised in a very democratic family, I remember my stepmother telling me about back in the logging days, if they, in Washington, of course, there are a lot of woods where there's a lot of logging. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of, they organized and became unions, and a lot of benefits that came from the unions included, you know, further down the road, in lieu of pay, mm-hmm. in benefit packages, you would receive, they would say, oh, you make X amount per year, but with your benefits, with insurance, your pay is worth, your yearly wage is worth X amount.
Right.
So I'm wondering, I don't know, sometimes I wonder if the corporations are in collusion, you know, because, you know, the insurance companies, all the companies or corporations being able to get tax breaks, mm-hmm. and tax credits for having insurance on their employees.
Right.
And I think people are forgetting about how much the unions have done for working class people. And there's a lot of us out here, you know, mm-hmm. and a lot of us do want the public option. I wanted single payer. I think that would have been the perfect option. But, you know, I just feel real strongly about the unions and the benefits that they have brought to us. But in some ways, you kind of wonder about whether, you know, the medical benefits that they tied into the benefits package.
Well, you know, also, Michelle, what is appalling is that how many Americans don't have a clue about what you just said, and no right-winger does. Hey, Michelle, I got to leave you there. We got a break. Thanks. I'm glad you called in. It's time once again for Malloy Program Podcast Trivia, wherein you get a chance to win a free one-year subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads, commercial-free, worth tens and tens of dollars. So let us immediately begin here. We shall talk with Bill in Beaver City, PA. Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's up? Hey, Mike, how you doing today?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. Me and my dad's out of the hospital now. I talked to you a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah. I remember.
Yeah, my dad's out of the hospital. We're actually on our way down to Florida right now.
Yeah, a little rest and relaxation or what?
Pretty much, yep.
Yeah, well, good. Just drive safely, okay?
Yeah, we are.
All right.
We have to listen to your show, though, but, you know.
Well, that's dangerous. All right, Bill.
Dangerous, he said.
Here we go.
My dad.
Oh, good. Well, tell your dad I said hi.
He said hi.
Oh, good. All right. Hi, Dad. Cool. All right.
He's got a Cartoon Network. He says he can't listen to the Cartoon Network of Fox anymore.
Well, tell him that's a step in the right direction.
That's a step in the right direction.
All right, Bill, are you ready?
Yeah, I guess. I'll try this.
All right.
Help me out.
All right. I'm going to give you the question, and I'll give you four choices for an answer.
All right.
One of Condi Rice's hidden talents is A, she's an accomplished pianist. B, she won a Pillsbury Bake Off in college for her cherry rhubarb crumble. C, she aspired to be a fashion designer and is credited with creating the first ergonomic slingback Mary Jane. Or D, she can recite all the world's capitals in under 20 seconds.
Wow. Let me think of
that. All right, let me go through them again. A, she's an accomplished pianist.
Accomplished pianist.
B, she won a Pillsbury Bake Off in college. C, she wanted to be a fashion designer and created the first ergonomic slingback Mary Jane shoe. Or D, she can recite all the world's capitals in under 20 seconds.
Hold on a second. We talked to my personal advisor.
Yeah, you use one of your lifelines. Go ahead.
Yeah, I use my dad as a lifeline here.
Did we run out of theme music? Good, there we go. Bill?
I think it's a bake-off, right, Dan?
The Pillsbury Bake-Off. No.
She's a pianist.
No, she's an accomplished pianist.
Ah, thought so. It was the other one. It was the pianist.
Right. Well, you know you're never supposed to listen to your old man, so.
Yeah, I know. I should have listened to my old man.
All right. Bill, thanks a lot. You guys be careful driving. Have a good time. And again, tell your dad that we're glad he's out and about. She still performs, as a matter of fact. All right, let's move on to Haven, who is calling from Durham, North Carolina. It's Haven?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Hey, Haven, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing tonight?
Fair to partly cloudy. All right, Haven, let me give you your question and then your choice of four answers, okay?
All right.
All right, which of the following statistics on Karl Rove is not true? Which of the following statistics on Karl Rove is not true? A, he was born on Christmas Day and therefore Christian is his middle name. B, he was raised by a stepfather who is gay. C, he never completed a college degree. Or D, he was employed as a circus clown in Utah. Which one of those statements is not true?
Not true.
Right. Let me do them again. A,
okay.
He was born on Christmas Day. That's why his middle name is Christian. B, he was raised by a stepfather who's gay. C, he never completed a college degree. And D, he was employed as a circus clown in Utah. Only one of those statements is false. Which one is it?
I would have to say A is false.
Oh, no, he was born on Christmas Day, and Christian is his middle name. The one that's false is he was employed as a circus clown in Utah. Everything else in there is true. But thanks, Haven. I appreciate your playing the game. As far as, let's see, my stepfather, I had a stepfather. He was not gay. I was not born on Christmas Day, but I never completed a college degree, and I was never a circus clown in Utah. So I guess Rove and I have one thing in common, or two things in common. All right, who's our last player? Bruce in California. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, good. I was rooting for everybody else to fail.
Well. All right, Bruce. I don't blame you. If I were a contestant, I'd wish the same thing. All right, here you go. What was unusual about Cheney's mode of transportation to Obama's inauguration just back in January? What was unusual about Cheney's mode of transportation to get there? A, he rode in his personal SUV, heavily guarded by Blackwater private security. B, he was pushed there in a wheelchair. C, he carried a bag of semi-rotten tomatoes just in case. Or D, he rode there on a donkey as staffers laid palm fronds at his feet. Which one?
How about wheelchair?
Wheelchair? That's it! All right, Bruce, way to go.
Yeah, but you know what, Mike? I got to tell you that I've got a secret weapon on this game.
Yeah?
Yeah, I listen to the Mike Malloy Show.
Oh, well.
So.
That
kind of gives me an edge.
Yeah, it does. It does. I hear you. All right, Bruce, hold on. Kathy will come online and get the pertinent information, and we will see that you get that free one-year podcast subscription to the Malloy program. Download, that is. I'm about wore out tonight. I don't know why. I have no idea. How about y'all? Are you tired? You don't have to call in an answer, but are you tired? Good Lord. What was it about this week? I didn't do anything different this week. Did you? Same old stuff. Maybe it's just the things that popped up in the wonderful, wacky world of the United States of America, 2009. I guess that's it. You know, to spend the whole week realizing it's dripping out. It's that slow drip, drip, drip water torture kind of thing. Not waterboarding, but, you know, the, what do we call it? We were kids. Chinese water torture. Drip, drip, drip. All this stuff that's coming out about the Bush crime family. And the interesting thing is it's being revealed by members of the crime family, like Tom Ridge. He was a member of the crime family. He really was. And his comment about how the color-coded terror alerts were supposed to be raised in order to manipulate elections and to manipulate the fear and trembling in this country. Do you remember the plastic sheeting and duct tape? Jesus Christ. Do you remember that? Remember when Walmart, or not Walmart, but Home Depot and Lowe's, the word got out that they were out of duct tape and plastic sheeting because everybody was running around like scared little warthogs just gathering up all this stuff. What else was it? I don't want to piss off Prairie too, but canned goods, we were supposed to get a bunch of canned goods and plastic sheeting and duct tape. What were we supposed to do with it, Mike? Well, the plastic sheeting, I don't know. You were supposed to have a room in your house where the terrorists couldn't get you, and you would seal off that room with plastic sheeting and duct tape. And, you know, I guess millions of Americans just stood there with their mouths hanging open, just saying, do I live in a goddamn insane asylum? Are people actually going out and buying duct tape? Are people actually paying attention to this lifesaver role of candy-colored flavored terror alerts? I know that's what we were doing, weren't you? I couldn't stand it. I thought that the country has really sunk into this sick, crazed skull of a Christian Armageddonist, George Bush, and a neo-Nazi vampire, Dick Cheney, And all the stormtroopers that surrounded them, the SS, the death's head people like Rumsfeld and oh my God, but it was happening. It was happening. And now, you know, all these truths that are coming out were stuff that, several of us liberal talk show hosts were talking about back when it was supposed to be not occurring. And I'm sure you did, too. You knew that was all jive nonsense, didn't you? Of course you did. And so did I. And so did anyone who had the sense of a sack of stale donuts. Jesus God. So now it all comes out. The lies, the manipulation. I can remember talking about the story, the boy who cried wolf. You know, you cry wolf enough times, and then when the wolf finally comes and eats your flock of sheep and rips your legs off, nobody comes because you've proven yourself to be a complete liar. The damage these bastards did to my country is incalculable. I'd like to punch them all right in the nose, you know what I mean? So my friend Steve used to say, I like to pop them in their eye. Bap! We'll be right back. God, remember when you used to go to a Stones concert and hear this? You'd get up and dance and smoke a doobie and play grab ass with your date, remember? Oh. It's 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew this week who did a great job. Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kate Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and of course, she who must be obeyed, Kathy Bay, our executive producer. I wonder if we can do all this again next week. Jared is in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jared.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Pretty good. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about kind of my job and what I do and my perspective of the healthcare system and how it could be fixed with the single payer.
Okay. Do you have me on a speakerphone?
I'm on Bluetooth. I can switch over to my handset. I'm sorry.
Yeah, if you would. Okay. Are you there?
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Is that better, Mike?
Yeah. We have such a delicate system here that, you know, if somebody coughs, the whole damn house of cards could collapse.
Sure. I was checking in the hotel at the same time. I install and repair CAT scans machines, and I'm not really comfortable with telling you the name of my company.
Uh-huh.
But what it is we mark up our machine over 100%.
Right.
And, you know, same thing. I talk to drug reps. They mark up their products 300-400%.
Right.
If we went to a single payer system, the government would nearly end that instantly. And I would have no fear for my job anyway. They'd still pay me the same, but there wouldn't be these huge markups that's costing the rise in healthcare everywhere.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. People just don't talk about that. I mean, until you brought it up, I haven't heard that part of the debate. Are you okay? Are you being mugged?
No, I'm okay. Like I said, I just checked into my hotel, so.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard that brought up in this, incredibly stupid, healthcare debate at all. What you're just talking about, these medical devices. I did read an article the other day that talked about the over, prescribing of some of this technology for people who literally just don't need it, but, you know, I've only had one MRI in my life, and that's when I had a pulled muscle in my neck. And I went to the doctor. Instead of saying, go get a massage, he said, well, here, let's get an MRI, which was crazy. You know, I knew eventually it'd go away. Like most of that stuff, you get a massage therapist and a chiropractor, and you're okay.
Sure, sure. I mean, the machine I install, once it's paid for, usually the docs have it paid for within 6 months, and it's pure profit for them. It costs them the electricity to run.
Yeah.
And they charge, you know, several hundred dollars, if not thousands of dollars for scans.
Yeah, yeah, it's
just ridiculous. I was listening to the right wing today just to get a laugh.
Yeah.
And they had this lady on that was, you know, going on and on. Of course, the right wing, they always say, well, Canada, you can't ever get a CT scan, this, that, and the other thing.
Right.
You listen to the left wing, actual Canadians call and tell you differently.
Right.
But, you know, and they're like, well, if we go to a single payer, then we won't get the same quality of equipment and all that. And that's not the truth. All the major manufacturers of medical equipment are in the United States.
Right, right.
It would only benefit us.
Yeah, the arguments being put out are crazy. I got to ask you, you say you're checking into a hotel. It's Friday night. Why aren't you home?
I travel pretty much Monday through Friday, and I had to drive from San Antonio to Dallas today.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't get done work until 6 o'clock. I installed the machine this week.
So when do you get home? Tomorrow?
Yeah, I'm about 2 hours from my house. I was just too tired to keep driving, so I'll get home real early in the morning to see the kids.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. That's good. All right, well, listen, Jared, take care. Thanks for checking in. That's a good point that you made. I appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Mike, and keep the truth coming. I really appreciate it. You're my favorite talk show host.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. All right, take care, Jared. That's the one part I hate about, you know, traveling like to San Francisco or Seattle or wherever we go to in support of this program. It's that checking in to a hotel. Man, I've never done that kind of traveling, you know, for business. Like Jared, or like a lot of people do, you know, you're on the road all the time. And so anyway, Jared, have a good remains of your trip and back home. Gary is in San Francisco. Gary's in a wind tunnel.
Hey, yeah, I'm on the road right now. I hope you can hear me.
Barely. Hi, Gary.
All right, I'm gonna give it my best shot. I'm gonna speak up.
Okay.
All right, I'm a naturalized American citizen, originally from the UK.
Uh-huh.
I spent the first half of my life growing up and living in England, and I spent the second half of my life living here in the United States. So I've been a patient and have, you know, first-hand experience of both public and private healthcare systems.
Right.
And I got to say, as I've been listening to this debate, I find it quite annoying to listen to a lot of the Republican and the right-wing talking heads knocking the National Health Service of my country of origin, because just purely anecdotally, in all the years I lived there, I never had a single problem with it. I found it very efficient, and actually there's a lot less bureaucracy and red tape under the British national health system than there is with the American privatized system.
Sure.
The point I particularly want to make is this. The real piece of nuance that's being missed by a lot of these right-wing guys, they're not going to tell you this part because it actually undermines their argument. As they talk about all the difficulties that the British people have with the National Health Service and they continue to demonize it, what they're not telling you is the big reason for that problem, or at least a large part of it, is that the British government over the last several years has actually been denationalizing the health service piece by piece and handing more and more care of more and more control of the NHS over to private companies under what they call the private finance initiative. As more of that control has been handed to private companies, the quality of the service has gone down because these private companies, at the end of the day, are always more interested in making profits and providing a public service.
Yeah, well, that, you know, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't know that, Gary. And listen, we're about out of time. Thanks a lot for calling in. I hope you call in again. But one of the reasons I think that the right wing can use the National Health Service as a demon ghost to scare Americans is because most Americans don't have a clue as to what the British system is. Hey, listen, y'all, have a great weekend, okay? Take care, keep it lit, and have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are. You've heard the news.